What up? Welcome to another episode of 94 Feet with Coach JT. Man, do me a favor, subscribe, leave a comment, let me know what you think as I continue to grow and just expand on this podcast journey. Today, man, this gentleman today is you may know him as the Rich Barber. However, he is the founder and the CEO of the Rich Barber, inventor of the 1 minute blade modifier, also on the money 10 second blade setter, as well as the flash comb and the Rich Barber method system. My guest today, this gentleman was born and raised in Sacramento, California. He has currently two barber shops in the Sacramento area and one in Los Angeles. Also, he is a former player at Sacramento City College, where we both have crossed paths. Chuka Torres, man. Chuka, what's up, man? How you doing?
What's up, JT?
Man, appreciate you being here, my guy, man. I know, again, busy man, always moving and shaking the business world. So we're going to jump right into it as we know. But just for the people that may not know Chuka the Barber or may not know the Rich Barber, from Sacramento or a little better background as well, man, what part of Sacramento did you grow up in and where you from?
So I was born and raised in downtown Sacramento in Alkali Flats. It was a little block about the park that had like two apartment complexes and a park in the middle that had a hoop court. And I grew up downtown and then, you know, Midtown area, definitely, you know, went to school in Sac High and Oak Park, and Oak Park definitely had an influence on me. And just that whole like Midtown, Middleland area.
Okay, Midtown down there. So growing up, again, I've known you as the athletic dude, very talented. But I mean, again, I've had a lot of athletes and different people on so far the show. But what sport was how many sports was it growing up for you coming in that area? Did you play growing up?
It was just hoop, man. It was just hoop. That's what was in my backyard. I mean, like I said, it was the apartment complex. And then the hoop court was in the middle. And, you know, that was my first love. That was my first passion. And that's what I gave my heart to. Okay. I mean, as a youngster, it was all hoop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Definitely on that hoop stuff. So at that age, I mean, at our younger age back then, bro, who was somebody you would say you kind of watched, emulate a little bit, try to simulate your game after during that time of your life growing up?
For the longest, it was AI.
Yeah.
That was for the longest. Yeah. You know, I always had Penny Hardaway. You know, was one of the ones I liked. But the longest run, like, that I was a huge fan of, and just his style and his crossover and his game and, like, his killer instinct, his AI.
A lot of similarities, bro, for sure. Yeah. Allen Iverson, man. So, going up and down that area. Middle school, did you go to Sutter?
Yep.
You went to Sutter for sure. Okay, yep. Sutter, and then straight to Ultra Sac High. During that Sac High time, man, was high school basketball something that you wanted to get it, you did and got into, or how did that go for you during that high school period, man, after leaving?
Yeah, no, I played at Sac High. I played my freshman year, sophomore and junior year. Those years were like, they weren't complete years, you know, always had issues with grades.
Okay.
And then I finished it out, you know, senior year. So, so yeah, it was something I did, and I played at Sutter too.
Yeah,
you know, so I always played Sac High. Like, you know, the goal was always to play hoop, but it was just, you know, the school work was just something I never did, you know, and it wasn't like preached in my home or anything like that. Right. So, you know, we just did what we wanted to do, and I didn't, you know, it was tough to keep the grades up sophomore, junior year, so those years weren't completed.
Yeah, so you talk about the home a little bit, bro. So give me a little bit insight about the home, man. Again, I'm blessed to know your brother too for years, man, and even worked together with Big Bro. So give me a little bit about the background of the home look like.
Yeah, I mean, we grew up in poverty. You know, like my mom was a single mom. She had four kids. She had my oldest brother at 17, me at 19, and then she had my sister and then my brother, and you know, we never had no pops in the home or nothing like that. My dad, he's from Nigeria. He left when I was two, so I didn't remember him. We never had conversations. We didn't speak on the phone or nothing growing up. Like, he was just out of my life. You know, same thing with my older brother's father. And my youngest brother, his father was around because he actually lived in Sacramento. So, you know, he would see him, we would see him. But, you know, we had no father figure. It was just my mom taking care of us. We was on welfare, you know, growing up. And it wasn't just a period of time. It was just always, you know, it was just that's what it was. But from a young age, my mom always, like, just taught us how to be strong, just taught us how to survive. She didn't really teach us. She just put us out there to go learn ourselves, right? So, you know, really young age, I was just out doing my own thing. You know, we was just out in the neighborhood. We was, you know, getting in trouble at doing shit we wasn't supposed to be doing. But we was just, you know, young kids and trying to survive and, you know, get it how we lived. And that was just it. But, you know, hoop was always the thing that kept me on a path towards, you know, that was my dream. That's what I wanted. So, you know, my neighborhood was just like, you know, at the time, it was just really like a lot of drug activity. Downtown, there's just a lot of homelessness, drug activity, you know, and in the gangs in the neighborhood, you know, that was there. Vincent Jackson, who one of the, if you searched him on Google, Vincent Jackson was one of like a kingpin drug dealer in like Sacramento. And he was the block, my block was like the block where they, you know, centralized in his mom was our neighbor. Hmm. So I never knew why the kids had gold chains and all the Penny Hardaways and Charles Fact. Barkley shoes and all this shit back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm a kid. You know, they were older than me. Like, they were all older than me. And you know, I was young. But it was crazy because, you know, everybody poor in the neighborhood, but there's this one family get that money. Got all the shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, you know, so just growing up downtown, it was always action, man, in my neighborhood. On my block was like, you know, it was a active block. There was just always action, always something to do. We was always hooping. On the weekends, there was this drug rehabilitation center right across the street. So all that, they would get to come out and it'd just be, everybody be hooping, man, right there on the, you know, at the court. Yeah, so it was just, it was always something to do, man. And, you know, growing up, you know, in poverty, we never had things, so mm-hmm. everything we did was through our creativity and our own imagination. So I feel like that really developed strongly during those times.
Definitely that faculty. Super dope. So we talked about that family aspect and being a mom. Her putting it out there, just, I mean, again, me, again, on a single parent home, you know, mama's boy, man. How was your relationship with your mom, bro? How was that growing up with you and your mom?
It was tough love in my house. So, okay. Like, we never showed love and affection. Like, my mom probably, you know, up until, like, as we matured and, you know, I moved out and, you know, as of recently, you know, like, you know, we tell each other we love each other and shit like that. But growing up, like, my mom never, you know, I love you was never said in the home. You know, it was probably maybe when I was going away for a 2-day, 3-day basketball tournament, she might say it, you know what I mean, or we might say it. But it was awkward to show affection or love in my home because it was just all about tough love. And so that definitely, you know, wasn't there. My mom was she never went to my basketball games, really. She probably went to a couple. She just, you know, it wasn't that she didn't care for the most part. It just, mm-hmm. We wasn't that type of family, you know. Right. It wasn't like, you know, and I guess we also didn't know how to be a family because my mom never had it, you know, and then we never had it. And so I remember I used to, when I started, like, you know, I had a, you know, my girlfriends and, or I went to their house and how they were a family, and it was like awkward to me how everybody just kind of, you know, cause it was never like that for us. So yeah, but you know, my mom was just always just, you know, straight up real and just was like telling us like, y'all gotta learn how to survive on your own. That's all she, you know, and I can remember her saying that since I was like 5. Throw me on a bus at 5 years old by myself, the city bus, and I'm thinking it's gonna pull up in front of the school and drop me off like the school bus, dude.
You had to walk a little bit. You had to walk.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just, you know, we never owned a car. My mom could never afford a car, so we never had a car. We was always walking, catching a bus. You know what I mean, it was always cold out. You know, I mean, during winter time, it was cold, and I never understood why. You know, I never liked it. I never liked the situation that we were in. I never liked being poor. I always fucking hated it. I can remember since I was conscious of it, I fucking hated it. And I always wanted to have. Yeah. I always wanted to have. You know what I mean? Because all the doors are shut on you down there when you're poor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's crazy, but again, bro, that's something again that you I can see it again now, man. That driving force behind behind you, bro. High school, you get through your senior year of high school, you make it through there. Now again, as we know now, you know now, man. Back when we was at it, but it wasn't as shine, it wasn't as hype as much. It was grit, grind, get after it. You get ready to graduate, man. What's on your mind at that point? Knowing again, you just talked about it, bro. I don't like not having stuff or not being poor, but also high school and basketball. What was the decision, or what role did you choose after that senior year of high school?
Man, I remember the day of graduation. I wasn't even going to go to my graduation. I just wanted out of school. That's all the fuck I wanted, you know. And I remember the day of our graduation. I didn't even have a graduation. I didn't even have the outfit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, while everybody was excited about, like, you know, all the events that go around during, you know, graduation, the senior ball, I didn't go to my senior ball, you know, but to me, it was like, let me get out the life, let me get away from this fucking restriction and this, I have to go to school, do this, so I can get, you know, into the game, mm-hmm. get into life, you know, and start, like, you know, doing something, so... I just wanted out, but, you know, when I was at home, I wasn't going to go. My partners called me. They was like, come on, man, this is our graduation. So I got up. I wore my brother's gown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 6'6", right? So that shit was hella big. I didn't even have a hat, you know what I mean?
Wrong.
I didn't have a hat. You know, and my mom, she didn't go to my graduation. And like I said, like, so for me, it's like, you know, everybody got their family and their parents, you know, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm just there, right? I think my sister might have showed up. Yeah, I think my sister showed up, but yeah, so, I went, graduated, from there, you know, I wanted to pursue my dream still, you know, hoop. So, signed up to Sac City, I redshirted, mm-hmm. and, it was like, you know, play a couple years here and then try to get to a 4-year college. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was thinking. But you know, it wasn't really realistic for me, the fact that, like, I literally went through the first 12 years of grade school, like, not participate.
Right.
You know, I got shit done, and I knew how to get my work done and pass to a certain extent, but I was never committed to school. I was committed to hoop, so that's why I went to school.
Right. Right.
And that's why I went to Sac City for hoop, but it wasn't for, like, education.
Yeah.
You know?
Different purposes. So, and during Sac City, I believe your first year redshirting was 2001. Was it 01?
I graduated 02.
You got your 02. Okay, yeah. So 02, yeah. So at the end of my sophomore year there, you was getting over there during that little stint. So how did you, man? So again, since you told me how what your motivation was, how did you kind of just stick it out, or how long did you stick it out with just the hoop in the school trying to make it work?
Well, I stuck it out. For, like, I guess I was sticking it out because, you know, I redshirted the first year.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, you know, coach was like, you know, redshirt, get your, you know, get those classes done and get ahead, mm-hmm. you know, with the classes and shit. But that didn't really happen. But I moved with my mom kicked me out after that. And then I was living with my partner, renting a room out of his mom's place. And, yeah, you know, we would always have jobs. Somebody in the crew, somebody had to connect to a mm-hmm. job always. And so we get like a little job and, you know, and then go to school, go to basketball practice and go to class, you know, and have your little job or your little hustle, whatever you're doing. And, you know, that's how, you know, I'll get by. We got the financial aid, you know, that was a little something to help get by. But, yeah, went through that first year and played that following year. And, yeah, you know, it was cool. The second year was supposed to be my year, like mm-hmm. a big year for me. But it didn't happen that way. But yeah, school, like, with no support and foundation, it's mm-hmm. hard to sustain.
Right.
You know, it's hard to survive. And when you giving your time to school, basketball, you know, going to class, working, and then, but it's not enough, or you maybe can't work no more because you have to, you know, give more time to school and hoop. So,
yeah,
you know, with no support, it's just, you know, it's really tough.
Yeah, definitely paying bills and trying to be a young man at that age when we still young men is definitely too different, you know what I mean? So, I agree with you. I feel you on that, man. So, after Sac City, bro, when does this, when do you start tapping in, touching the water about this business of haircut, a barber in general, because again, I'm not sure when the time frame is, but when does that light start to go off, or when do you figure out, okay, you know, I got to start my own income or bring in some income some kind of way? And how do you choose barber?
Well, I always, I grew up cutting my own hair and cutting people hair in my neighborhood, but not as something I really like was like pushing to do, because I would rather be hooping and practicing, working on my game. So I started cutting my own hair around 10 years old. Because like I said, we grew up in poverty. We couldn't afford haircuts. So started cutting my own shit. And so it was something I always did. And even like, you know, at Sac City, I would, you know, cut some of the teammates here and there. It was just, I had it in my back pocket, but it was really for me. You know what I mean? But I would make money. I would charge, I think I was charging like $7 and stuff, you know, during college, and cutting and making a little extra money. So that was cool. But I didn't really take it serious until like after Sac City. Because, you know, I had went to jail, and that ended my, you know, college and hoop career. So when I got out, you know, I'm an ex-felon. And then now it's like, you know, no one would hire me. Not like I wanted the job or I was looking for a career for someone to hire me, but you still need to make some money temporarily, right? So, you know, even when I got out, I was still doing some stupid shit at the time, trying to, you know, get by, make some money. But eventually I end up, you know, going to barber college, because I was married at the time. I got married at 22, and my wife had got pregnant. You know, my wife at the time got pregnant. And so my father-in-law had actually, I was working for him because I couldn't get no job nowhere. So that whole summer I was roofing houses. No, we was painting houses. And I never liked the work. Like, I can't work a job that I don't enjoy. I can't do, you know, I just never was that type of person. But, you know, I had to do it at the time. But worked that whole summer, hated it. But, you know, when work got slow, during, like, you know, when the season changed, I had found a barber college, and it was like a $500 down payment to start, and he actually gave me that $500 to start barber college. So then when I started barber college, of course, I was all in, because I already started kind of seeing the vision for myself. I started seeing myself in that, you know, on that career path as a barber. I started, you know, looking at videos, looking into the game more, trying to get better. And I fell in love with it, you know, like, and it was like, I was like, damn, I'm gonna make this happen. And I saw the freedom and flexibility and the opportunity that I could create for myself in this industry. So, I hit it rolling, man. Like, I got in and got it cracking. You know, in barber college, we had Macro cracking at
Macro barber college, man. Yeah, yeah. Macro barber college, that's what's up. So you get in there, again, shout out to the father-in-law for the down payment, because without that, you know what I'm saying, who knows where you would have been, right?
Hey,
got to pay it back, bro. You got to pay it back. So you get through barber college. Let's talk a little bit about any struggles you may have had during that time, though. Anything really come about where you maybe almost quit, or you automatically knew, I'm sticking this out, you know what I mean? Give me some hard times maybe you might have faced during that time.
Yeah, I never, I don't recall like wanting to quit. I mean, I would work graveyard and then go straight, come home and have to go like straight to barber college, you know, maybe sleep an hour or something and go straight to barber college. It was hard, man. It was hella hard. I would cut, after hours, I would cut hair at home. So I would have some clients come to, so I can make some money. You know, there were times I had my daughter at barber college with me as a baby, you know, like my mom used to drop, we had the one car. So, you know, I would get dropped off, or someone would get dropped off, drop off my wife at work, and then the baby at my mom's, and then school. So it was like nonstop. And then we'll go to barber college and just fucking labor all day, because we never cracked the books there. We never cracked the books and did any theory or nothing. Like, and they were just having us labor in that motherfucker. So it was hella hard, man. it was tough. And then also just, you know, once I got my license, I thought I was, I made it and I arrived. And then you get in and you're starting from scratch still. You got a bill, you know, the money don't come in right away. I was thinking it was, you know. So there was times when I thought about, you know, for us, every time, you know, growing up, the way we grew up, every time nigga think about switching up, it'd be like this, some illegal shit.
Yeah, right? Hey, that's some you fast know? Money, try to get, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd be like, man, fuck this, you know what I mean? Like,
so what kept you saying that, though, so what kept you from crossing that point? What kind of, because you probably thought tiptoe that line, but what made anything kept you over?
Man, it's often it's boring, you know, drug, yeah, we're trying to sell drugs, it's just like, it's just not enough excitement, but you know, you have like, you have this fantasy of like, man, there's, you know, getting money and all this shit, but, you know, I also too, man, I love my freedom, you know what I mean, and once I really, you know, I read that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, when I read that book, man, my whole world got bigger, man. You know, and I was like, oh, there's so many other ways. And it's like, I always knew I had the creativity to create, you know, always knew I would invent something. I don't know why, but I just always knew, you know, that I was like, I'm going to invent something one day. So it was, you know, and like I had got in church for a little bit for like 3 years, which was good. I got in church and got married. And even though, you know, I don't do it like that anymore, it got me out, you know, of that mindset and got me out of, you know, that destructive mentality or even like giving that route of consideration. So that was huge for me.
Getting a foundation, bro, is that mind for sure.
You got to have purpose. And I feel like, just like you said, when you leave high school and if there's any transition period that you're going through, like you got to find purpose as soon as possible, because when you don't, then that's when you can you know, go the wrong direction, because you're kind of open to whatever, right? So then, you know, influences or past conditioning or, you know, just survival instincts kick in, but often those survival instincts are just automatic and they're not really rational or the best, you know, well thought out. They're not really the best thing, especially, you know, living in a society where there's consequences for doing certain shit. I mean, real consequences. So, so yeah, like those transition periods, I was just like, man, blessed to just find purpose, you know, and actually like, fall in love with the purpose. That's dope. And, you know, and give it my all.
Man, that's dope to find that vision, find that key. So you talk about getting out and still not being it, like the money ain't just coming in. What was your first shop or get, where was you at, where'd you land at out of Barber College, man, besides the house situation or the clients come to your house, what shop or whatever did you land in first?
So I went to work at a shop called Division One in Elk Grove, and the reason I went there was one of my good and longtime friends who actually would always tell me to go to Barber College, he actually used to always tell me about it. I'm like, man, I'm not going to barber college. I ain't going to get rich going to barber college. Like, I'm over, like, I'm trying to get rich, right? So, but he would go get cut at barber shops. I never did. Like I said, I never went to shops like that. But he would always say, like, the barbers pull out, you know, hella, you know, cash.
And a lot of money, bro.
Yeah. So, you know, I get my license, and I think I'm going to get it popping. And, you know, I'm there. And, it wasn't happening, you know. And you're watching, you know, the established barbers, you know, get booked all day, and you sitting there, and they walking like, you know, you like, hey, I'm available, like you see me, they don't see you, because they know what they want, right? But that, I didn't take that as like anything, like I didn't envy or nothing or get jealous. I was like inspired. I was like, I want that. I want to be that good to a motherfucker, like, even if this nigga, he's booked up to next week, and they still won't get cut by none of us. They like, I'll wait till next week then to get you. I mean, so that just really inspired me. So even though, you know, things were slow for me at the time and the money wasn't there, I could see someone that already did it, you know, that had what I wanted. So that was really good to actually see that and know that, okay, that's what I'm going after.
That's super dope. You get that opportunity there. again, knowing your creative mindset, what are you thinking then? Like, what's next? Once you see that coming in, once you start to get established a little bit, bro, how do you begin to elevate your thinking or mindset?
Go ahead. I started starting businesses. I started all kind of, I tried hella businesses. Okay. I forget how many things I tried, yeah, and that didn't work. My my daughter's mom, she reminds me all the time. She'd be like, "You remember when you?" So I'd be like, "Fuck, you did." Like, but you know, the first successful business I had, where I had people working for me, so I was cutting hair in the shop and I was making money through my business, was a transportation company.
Okay.
And I had like some of my partners working for me, and there was drivers and stuff. So it would bring like a few extra thousand a month, you know, cash flow, which was cool, yep, you know? And, but my next, I always saw barbering as a foundation that I could build wealth on, you know, that I could get rich with. Like, if I got this foundation, even if I bet, cause I bet on myself and I'll put it all on myself. Right. And often I've lost it all, you know what I mean? But, I could go to work the next day and make some money, you know?
Yeah.
Get paid same day, make some money.
Right.
And then stack up again and try it again. So I was always trying business ventures. I was always trying shit. And most of them didn't work. A lot of them, I didn't have any experience in that field. And then I was like, eventually I was like, why am I doing all these businesses outside of what I do every day? You know? And I was like, so when I started the Rich Barber, I was like, I'm going to give this. Well, I had that, like, the Rich Barber first was just a mindset for me. It was a concept of self, because I'm studying certain things and I'm looking back at my life, and I'm not a lukewarm person. I'm either hot or cold. Like, I'm an extremist, you know, and sometimes that got me into trouble. But when I directed constructively, it brought me a lot of benefit. So when it kind of clicked for me, I realized that, you know, all my conditions and circumstances in life did have to do, they were connected to, you know, the concept I had of myself, the mindsets I had, the identity I took upon, you know, and I was like, whoa, you know, if I'm a barber, you know, and I want to be rich, then I need to have that concept of self. I gotta see myself rich before it's gonna actually happen.
Right.
You know, because my conditions and circumstances are just a result, the effect of my thinking, of my beliefs, of what I believe is true. So, and growing up in such poverty, I always was concerned. I always criticism was tough for me. Because being poor, you just criticize all the time, or you don't have, or whatever. So what people thought was always something that I struggled with. And I was like, you know, this is another way to even go against that, right? Because I don't have anything that resembles rich material success, right? But, you know, I had to make it true for myself. I had to have concept of myself, that concept for myself. And I put it out there, you know, to really, you know, call the unseen, you know, and bring it to life, you know, make the unseen become seen, and for myself. And that was just my belief. That was my experience in life, was that, you know, the beliefs I had, you know, the concepts of self, those things manifested in my life. Mm-hmm. And if I wanted to become the Rich Barber, I had to move into that space and that state now and fully believe it. And if that came with calling my brand that and presenting that out there to the world and not having no material validation for the time being and being criticized for that. Like, no one knew what the fuck a rich barber was, because barbers wasn't even making money like that back then.
Right.
I mean, then that's what I had to do. And, you know, I remember thinking like, you know, damn, should I, you know, call my brand this, you know? And that's why I put company at the end, because, you know, I wanted people to know that was my concept of self, and this is what I was going after. But I also wanted to know people to know that I had a company and a business and products they could buy, right? So yeah, I was like, man, you know, this is the one opportunity. I feel like in life, sometimes you only get one opportunity to write your story a certain way, because you can't rewind time.
Right.
I'm successful now, and so, you know, and if I get it now, then already, you know, I don't have that prophecy for myself, right? To prophesy my own shit and walk into it and make that shit happen in front of everybody when everybody knew what the name was and what I was going after.
Yep. That's super dope. So you talk about, before we get too much to your book though, bro, where are the information, man? Again, because think about, say, we've all, think about how we used to talk, communicate years ago. Now, even speaking to you, when you present to people, bro, when I'm hearing you leaving your messages, it's such a different truth that I know from what we know years ago, right? But where did you gather information at, or who kind of helped feed into that? To, again, you're not to get the knowledge into a book. You had to get it from somewhere, or what sources were you using, man, to elevate your overall thinking and mind at that point, man?
So I think the biggest thing for me was getting experience and then having knowledge. Then when I got knowledge, I was like, oh, that's my experience, right? But without the experience, you get knowledge and you don't, it doesn't give it that, it doesn't solidify it without the experience, you know, behind it, because you just think it's knowledge. Oh, I know something. But when I, you know, so, but when I started reading, I studied Napoleon Hill for like 5 years. It was like the only shit I studied, you know. And one thing I realized, I remember like trying to learn all these different things, and all these motherfuckers would teach things their way. And there's just so much information out there. And I remember like really like seeing and realizing the power behind Napoleon Hill's work. And it connected to my experience. So I was like, I believe it is true to me, because I could, you know, I didn't have success, but as far as like the way the mind worked, you know, and the imagination and shit, like I could connect it to my experience. So studying Napoleon Hill like crazy. I studied a lot of New Thought movement at the time too. So I was getting a lot of like information, not a lot of knowledge, just falling in love with just learning about myself and the power of thought, you know. And that's why, like, in the section I talk about the power of an idea and like these ideas and concepts we have of self, and these ideas and concepts we have of the world. So for me, it was an experience. So I learned a lot from Napoleon Hill. I've studied most of my success came from just connection there.
You good?
Yeah. A lot of my success came from learning just the power of the mind, thought, and imagination. Like I said, like I really invented my way to success when it comes to like monetary wise. Like the majority of it came from my invention, you know.
Right.
And then also like Chris Johnson, who has been like someone that always just believed in me. He used to coach me at the bar at the Boys and Girls Club. You know, the basketball team there we had. And, you know, Chris was always ahead of the game, like, you know, and it was someone I looked up to. And, you know, we would have conversations. And I remember him just saying, like, man, like, I believe you're going to be rich one day. And I was like, you know, coming from him, that meant something, you know.
Yeah.
And so now, like, I really invest in my knowledge. I invest in my team. I invest in my relationships. It's just a lot of investing. Like, and now I try not to just spend my time, energy, and money in a way. I try to like invest it, you know, and not just saying like my, like invest in a stock. I mean, like, you know, making sure that I get some type of, you know, multiplying return,
right?
You know, on there, or some type of, you know, benefits. So, and that's been huge for me. But yeah, business stuff. What else?
Let me ask you this real quick. Did you ever think, I'm probably sure not know the answer, would you be end up reading Napoleon as an older age in your life? How do you think?
Napoleon Hill?
Yeah, how would, I'm saying, I think about it. Did you ever think in your lifetime, I'm going to be reading this about this dude?
Like, nah, because I didn't read nothing growing up, bro.
Right.
I didn't read nothing. Like, I think I read one book in my first, you know, 12 years. I didn't read, bro.
Yep.
I didn't read, you know, so I never thought I'd be reading anybody, you know, so right. I never thought that. Like, reading was boring to me, but you know, the reason why it was boring was they was giving me the shit to read. I didn't select my shit.
Right.
When I was able to select my shit, then they started being it. You know, I started enjoying it. But I always, you know, I read a lot of it was more about the result I want to get in the real world. Right. To, you know, what can I read to help me get a certain result?
That's what's up. So let's get into this Rich Barber method, man. What is it though? Because I mean, again, for some that may not know, just kind of give me a little background. Because if not, we're gonna make them purchase the book, of course, in the download. Yeah. They gotta go download the book and go get it. But just give me a little bit about what the Rich Barber method actually is.
Well, the Rich Barber method is a model I created, and I created a model. It was, of course, I'm in the barber industry, so it was created specifically for barbers, but the terms I use.
Yeah.
For barbers, but it applies to everybody. Mm-hmm. Because it's a model on how to attract clients, keep them, and charge more. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I created a model, and I broke up barbering, or whatever you do, you can break it up into three simple domains. And that way you know what each domain is for and how it contributes to the whole, and then you can see the power behind conquering and mastering each domain and doing it consistently, simultaneously. So in each domain, I created mindsets, affirmations to adopt the mindsets, and tools to help you conquer that specific domain. So you can think of the Rich Barber method as just like a map, a roadmap on what you need to do, the mindsets you need to cultivate, the person you need to become, and the actions you need to take in order to grow as an individual, and ultimately, you know, have control over your career, your destiny, in terms of attracting clients, keeping clients, and being able to charge more and continue to scale your prices until you get the lifestyle that you've always wanted. Definitely. From whatever you're doing.
Definitely dope. Like you said, it's for all people in any business or any walks of life. Yeah. You can relate to it and it'll help begin improve your business and your brand. And I think, man, I'm gonna do real quick
and,
though,
and
bro.
To put it another way, like it's a model to build a business around you, yourself.
Yeah. All right. So I got a couple quotes I'm gonna read out of the book. I want you to just say, because again, I highlighted all through this book, man. I tabbed mine up, bro. I'm reading a couple quotes,
bro.
And I'm gonna have you just give me a response to what these quotes mean to you, because you put me here for a reason. So I'm gonna read a couple quotes. So, success isn't overnight. It's when every day you get a little better than the day before. It all adds up. By The Rock Johnson.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people think success is a result, like a cause and effect result. Like I do this, I get it. No, it's an emergent, right? It's an emergent property, and it's when all these things eventually come together in such a way that the emergent is success. So knowing that it's going to be a process, knowing that it's going to take time, knowing that as long as you just keep moving, you got purpose and you move towards that purpose every day, little by little, that eventually all the pieces will start to come together and that emergent will be success. So, and just want to give people the persistence, how important persistence is in achieving success.
Dope. So next one, I will not lose, for even in defeat, there's a value, lesson learned. So it evens up for me.
James. Yeah, that's whole, man. I've learned in life and in the game of success, often it's just how you're looking at the shit. It's just your perspective and or the angle you're looking at it, but you can always turn shit in a way and look at it in a way to where it's not necessarily damaging or a loss, but it's a opportunity or there's some benefit in it. And Napoleon Hill, you know, would always say, like, you know, every temporary failure leads you with an equivalent benefit. But often people don't know how to find it or look for it. So that's what that means. Like, change your perspective sometimes. And sometimes you got to look at shit a different way in order to extract the benefit and the value in order to keep your spirit, you know, strong to keep going.
Dope. Just last one. You may know this guy. The barber life is so much better when you're in demand, making money and winning. Trust me. Chukatore.
It is, bro. And it's like it's something you got to experience, because when you don't have no demand for your services, it fucks with your self-esteem. It fucks with you, man. Like,
yeah.
you have this skill, talent you want to express, but there's no way to express it. Why? Because you need someone to be able to express it on. You need a client. And so, but when you have this demand, like this overflowing demand, like you turn the water, you turn it on, turn it up, like you in control. And then when you have that demand, I'm only one person. So therefore, you know, I'm not like my 1 minute blade modifier. We can produce thousands of those, ship them all over the world at the same time. But no, like I'm one person. So when that demand is there, then my value goes up, right? When I got overflowing demand, my value goes up. So in return, I make more money. And then therefore you put those combinations together with the right mindsets, you know, right attitudes, the right environment, you know, and you got that demand and you're making money, you win it. And it's just a really fun life. Like it's a really fun life to, you know, be winning and making money like in your passion. And I think often people as artists, we sometimes downplay the money, you know, as if, oh, this is my passion. It's not so much about the money. Well, you know, profit is benefit, right? And we don't take action unless we see benefit or profit, right? I mean, you know, I'm not going to go to the, why I go to the gym and pain myself and working out, right? Because I want the result. Mm-hmm. I want the benefit. I want to profit off it, like in my strength. So same thing with our labor. It's still labor, but when you can love your labor, then you're blessed. Yeah. And when you can make money, real good money off your labor, then you win it. That's the life. You know what I mean?
A lot of people yearn for that and they don't get to it, to do two things.
Often I said that in the book, often people don't get both.
Right.
You know, and the money, you know, the passion call you automatically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you find your passion and it calls you automatically, okay, that's done. And then what's hard for people to figure out is the money. Because that's a different game, and most people don't understand that game, or they don't have the confidence around that game. So it's a two part, you know, it's two parts. But when you can get both of them and get them working together, it's dope.
So
it's dope.
Money or getting both, right? Getting the opportunity, bro, to get your first shop in your home city. How difficult was that? I'm going to start with that part. How difficult was to get that thing open and rocking and location, all that, man?
Man, that wasn't difficult.
Really?
The opportunity came to me, and I just jumped on it, man. Like, and I was in the shop at the time, so I was able to bring in barbers that, you know, no matter what level they were at, I was able to teach them, give them the game, and get it popping, so... That wasn't hard at all, because the opportunity just came and I was ready for it. It was different. I never wanted to own a shop, you know, because I don't like managing people, you know. But the opportunity just came, man, and I jumped on it and tried it, and it worked.
And it just it blew up from there. So let's go as far as expansion, because then you go from NorCal. Mm-hmm.
That's a little harder.
Pits. You go down to SoCal. What makes that move come about? I have an idea, but let me know how that come about, because that's a land of opportunity. I know for the, you know, saying, this business.
I always wanted to be in a big city, bro, and make it happen in a big city. Ever since since I was young, bro, I just was fascinated with like cities like New York City and just the action and the fucking opportunity and the fucking gigantic city skyscrapers. Like I'm stimulated by that shit. And like I said, like even though I'm from Sacramento and it's a lot slower than LA, but my neighborhood was just active, right? We always, you know what I mean? So I like action, and I always wanted to be in LA. Tupac sold me LA real well, like, you know, him talking about LA and shit. And I always just wanted to be in LA. So, you know, big city. So when the opportunity came to move out there, and when I say opportunity was because, you know, my daughter's out here and you know, her mom's out here, but when they were willing to move, they brought it up. I was like, let's go. Like instantly was like, let's go. Dope. And so moved out there, and I love it, bro. Like everything goes through LA. You know, everything comes through there. I'm stimulated by the city, the landscape, the geography, the weather, like, just, you know what I mean? Like, it's stimulating for me, so it's definitely the place for me. And I knew when we went out there, though, you know, going out there, I just knew we was going to have to come with it. I opened up a shop. You know, I'm not from there, so. But man, the city love us, bro. We get a lot of love, a lot of respect, and we just getting started. You know, we opened up and the pandemic hit, so we ain't even really got to do it the way we gonna do it.
Yeah. So where's the shop located at, actually, in LA?
It's on Beverly Boulevard, Beverly and Sweetser.
I mean, got so prime time location.
Yeah, it's like four blocks from the Beverly Center. Beverly Center right up there. We right here. Dope location, man. This is something special.
You did. Yeah, it definitely is, man. Yeah. Again, congratulations. So, right now, with the Rich Barber, man, I mean, I know you always cooking something up. If you got something you want to share, what's up next, man? Let me know what's popping next. What's to come? What's to be on the lookout for?
Man, I'm really excited. Like, we had a lot of setbacks with this project of our hair, like consumable goods products, shampoo, conditioner, beard oil. A lot of setbacks, but now, like, you know, we've launched it, and I'm really excited about this because, you know, a lot of the products, although consumers buy them, like the products I invented and stuff like that, it was kind of more like an experience for the most part, when you're not a barber, the closest is the experience that you can get. The only way you can experience the Rich Barber was kind of like going to the shop. You know, like going to the locations. But I feel like now that we're moving into like shampoo, conditioner, beard oil, like whether you're a barber or not, you can take home that experience with you now. You know what I mean? And so, like you said, like even with the book, like when I started, the more I talk about the mindset, what the Rich Barber represents, what it actually is, the power of the idea and all that, like people connect with it from all different industries, you know? But I didn't, but now I got a way they can actually, like, you know, even connect with us more with actual like hair, you know, the products, the shampoo, the conditioner, the beard oil. So that's what we've been cooking up, man. Really excited about that. And yeah, mostly I just been really rebuilding my team. So got a solid team, and we definitely gonna be turning shit up real soon.
That's what's up, bro. Man, again, so before we get out of here though, just somebody who's been through some trials, tribulations, successes, failures, bro, responsibilities, what kind of, just let's talk about to the barbers personally though, what kind of just tips off top that you want to, jewels you can drop on them from if they're just getting started or been in the game for a while, what gems outside of me letting them know purchase this book because it's all written that you can share with them right now, anything you can share with them right now, throw it to them right now.
I think the most important thing is to find a like proven model. Like I said, the method or whatever, like find something that you can stick with. There's so much information and so much like distractions out there. Like find something that you believe in, that's a model that's been proven, and work that shit. Stick with it. You know, just like I did with Napoleon Hill's work. And, you know, there was so much other shit, but I needed a system, a model that I could just work, right? That I could master. And if you can master one thing, it'll take you a long way. So I would say just find that. You know, whatever that is, find a system, a model that you can stick with, that's proven, that you believe in, and then just don't ever give up. Like, just stay persistent. You know, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be, it's all part of the game. But like I said, sometimes you got to invert, flip it on its head, look at it a different way. You know, sometimes you got to just change the perspective. But, you know, if I would have quit, you know, at any time, I wouldn't be here today. You know what I mean? So because I've had that experience multiple times, I know just don't quit, nigga. That's it. At the end of the day, wake up, go after the same shit you was going after the day before. And I've had many ups and downs, and I tell people all the time, the reason I kept growing and my business kept growing and I kept having more success, because no matter what happens in my life, I wake up every day on the same shit, same purpose. Remember, I gave myself 5 years to actually, you know, stick with the one thing, and I wake up on the same shit every day. You know what I mean? I know what I'm going after. So no matter what happens, I know what I'm waking up and going after the next day.
Wake up and go get it, bro. Look, man, I appreciate you. I know you got to get back to that grind, or you got something else cooking, bro. So I appreciate you taking time out your day, man. And continue success. And I know when I get down to LA, I'm definitely tapping in physically to the shop again and just and checking it out, man. Because I know the experience and the reading reviews and seeing the videos, it's number love in there for you, man. So you keep doing what you're doing, baby, holding it down.
Appreciate you,
man. Take it easy, bro.
Yeah, all right,
later.